His Last Bow. Foreword by Stephen Fry. Subtitled Some Later Reminiscences of Sherlock Holmes, this penultimate collection of stories from the pen of Arthur Conan Doyle was probably intended, as the valedictory phrase Last Bow suggests, to be a farewell volume. Published in 1917 at the height of World War I's ferocity, it assembles six stories seen earlier in magazine form, but is patriotically crowned by the title story, His Last Bow, The War Service of Sherlock Holmes, a spy adventure in which Holmes and Dr. Watson face off a wicked German secret agent. As the world well knew, Conan Doyle had tried once before to bid a final farewell to his hero almost a quarter of a century earlier, in 1894, when he propelled him from the edge of a Swiss ravine into premature death, but under public pressure and that of his own purse, had brought him back, literally from the brink, and gone on to produce more stories of the great detective after that crisis than he had written before. So Holmes survived the death of Queen Victoria and her age of hansom cabs, telegrams, gaslight and certainty, to live on into the world of submarines, cinema, telephones, and anxiety. Now he was to be shown to have been active in the build-up to the horror of the Great War. Dr. Watson's short preface to this collection makes it clear that in 1914, on the eve of the war, when that final story is set, Holmes had already been permanently retired for some time, and it was only the call of duty that tugged at his patriotic spirit and took him away from his beloved Sussex beehives. Otherwise, the collection demonstrates very well Doyle's love of mysteries with exotic backstories, giving us a fine foretaste of what were to become common 20th-century fictional plotlines and factual headlines. Italian-American mafia vendettas, stolen government plans, deadly packages in the mail, brutal Central American dictators who loot their country and flee, the dangers of hallucinogenic drugs, enemy agents in conspiracy with treacherous terrorists, as well as the more usual mix of unexplained disappearances and macabre deaths. By 1917, the Great War in Europe was at its monstrous height. In April of that year, the United States of America joined in, but there was to be over a year and a half of uncertainty and much more appalling carnage before the Allies secured an armistice and the final surrender of the Central Powers. For Conan Doyle to produce a story at this time which showed Holmes's apparent victory over a powerful German spymaster who would have crippled Britain's chances in the war even before it began was a masterstroke of propagandist opportunism. He could hardly have had Holmes and Watson on the continent of Europe actually fighting, but to suggest that Germany's grand plan of infiltration had failed at the outset, and that it was the greatest, as it were, living Englishman who had achieved this victory, was to suggest that in the seeds of German aggression were its defeat, and that the by now almost folkloric figure of Holmes had been at our backs all this time. This idea was to be repeated with increased fervour 9 years after Conan Doyle's death in 1930, when Britain was once more at war with Germany, and an American helping hand was again hoped for by the beleaguered Allies. For it was in 1939 that Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce appeared in the first of their 14 films together as the world's favourite non-comedic double act. Although, having said that, Nigel Bruce's moustache-blowing double-takes as Dr. Watson did have their splendid comic moments. The first two adaptations were produced by 20th Century Fox and were set in the authentically canonical Victorian London, but in 1942 the actors and the franchise, as we would now say, moved to Universal Pictures and made Sherlock Holmes and the Voice of Terror, an updating into the early 1940s of His Last Bow for the World War II generation, using the same name for the story's German spy, von Bork, and ending with the same magnificently stirring speech from Holmes about the coming wind from the east. People nowadays sometimes mock the movement of this Hollywood series into what might be seen as a kitsch, B-movie, Sherlock Holmes versus the Nazis scenario. But while the later films did decrease in budget and originality, the same righteous sense of duty and patriotism informs that splendid adventurousness of the first few adaptations. Universal were already aware that there would be some resistance to their updating of the canon and presented cinema audiences with a title card referring to the ageless nature of the characters. A cute opening scene in which Watson makes Holmes swap his Victorian tweed deerstalker for a dashing 20th-century fedora keeps it all light and difficult to rail against. The enormous success of Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman's portrayal of the immortal pair in BBC television series Sherlock, transported to a 21st-century London, as well as Johnny Lee Miller's Holmes and Lucy Liu's Dr. Joan Watson in the modern New York City of CBS's Elementary, shows that this belief in the agelessness of the duo will probably prove itself to be, in itself, ageless. Before Holmes arrived in the culture, we could hoik Robin Hood out of Legend's dressing-up trunk and give him a dusting down when the enemy clamoured at the gates, as indeed Warner Brothers did in 1938. These days, the US has the Marvel and DC Comics universes to call upon for timeless heroes and warriors for truth and justice. Indeed, Sherlock Holmes himself was pressed into comic book service for a DC imprint when the great Alan Moore created his League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. The fact is, Holmes does transcend his creator and therefore his original milieu. Even now, we can be sure that Holmes has battles unthought of to fight, and wars yet undreamt of to win in hologram and multimedia formats and modalities that we cannot imagine. Our civilization, if that it be, and our language will be long dead before the great detective truly does make his last bow. But now, for your listening pleasure, is Sherlock Holmes's first last bow.